Listeners, thank you so much for joining me. You've got Mark here on the Content Callout. I am absolutely thrilled to share with you this amazing conversation that I had with my new friend, Andrea Kill. She's the CMO at Electric.ai. She's got two decades of experience spanning business strategy, demand generation, brand message and design, product, content, go-to-market strategies. It is incredible what she has seen and done. Her teams have been responsible for a ton of growth. More recently, prior to Electric.ai, Andrea served as the CMO at Upserve, where she was responsible for marketing and sales development. And prior to that, she was at Signpost and Sales Through. She's been there. She's done that. She's seen it. And I absolutely loved this conversation with her. She gives us some really hardcore tactical advice on what you can do to improve your marketing operations. And what I love about this interview is that she's very clear about why it's so important to have a good team and why it's so important to have radical candor within that team. I was thrilled with this, and I would be thrilled if you would share this with your friends, your family, your colleagues. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts. Tell us how you feel on social. Thank you so much for listening to this. As always, enjoy. Andrea, how are you?
Good, thanks, Mark. How are you?
I am super stoked that you are on the show today. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
I love your background. I know we were talking about this before the show, but the palm trees and the blue skies and the ocean, this is where I want to be right now. I feel like we're on the same wavelength already.
Yeah, I know. And this is the end goal. I want to be on a beach, so I think about it often. You know, it's funny though, I tell people, you know, they're like, what's the end goal? I'm like, on a beach? They're like, you could never just sit on a beach somewhere. I'm like, I could.
So. Yeah, well, a beach, a nice drink, right? A great book. I feel like that's the way of the future for me. And it sounds like for you too. So that's great.
Yep.
As we start with every show, we start off with these rapid fire tactics and strategies. What are your three rapid fire tactics?
Sure. I mentioned this to you, but they're going to be pretty tactical. So first, I implement this wherever I go. But Bizible is a technology I really don't feel like I can live without. Bizible was bought by Marketo, I think, some time ago. But it lets you know where your marketing originated sources are coming from. So like when you make an investment, really what's driving that. And that is key to like important, very important decision making, because my job is to put people and investments around things that drive money into the business. So I would say just get a good tracking tool, whatever that is. I use Bizible. That's one.
Shout out to Bizible. Holy cow. What a great plug. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, there are others, but I don't know. I find that one to be helpful. The second is just building good forecasts. I know sales has typically, you know, sales operations that thinks about sales forecasting, but marketing needs to be just equally as good as building marketing forecasts, and specifically by lane. So every month I go through a process with my team whereby we're just looking at where we're making investments, and we are just forecasting how much marketing originated. Basically, bookings will come in for that. So just get really, really good at doing that. That gives a lot of confidence to the CEO and the CFO to continue to invest in marketing. So I think that's pretty important.
Awesome.
And then the last one, I mentioned this briefly in the other two, but know the difference between marketing originated and influenced, because there is a big difference. And at Electric, there's probably like a 25% incremental, like I don't want to call it credit, but sort of like that's what influenced is, because you're doing so many things like in and around what the sales organization's doing. There's like the act of originating it, like was marketing the reason this person found us and came in and wanted the thing and said, hey, I'm interested in IT support. Well, great. But also, like, are you doing other things to help the sales organization? And that's influenced. So know how to track it, get good rules around it, and be clear in terms of how you report on it.
I love that. Very tactical and perfect as those segue into this discussion. I want to dive into a couple of those things, because I find the tracking of marketing to be endlessly fascinating and very difficult for a lot of different things, especially when it comes around content and a lot of the potentially the ads that you're associating with that content and tracking it back to the original piece of content that a lead would interact with. So let's maybe dive into that topic. What is maybe the easiest way, and maybe Bizible is the answer to this, but what is the easiest way for you to track a marketing qualified lead back to an original piece of content that someone interacted with it? And what is the process that you go through to make sure that you can track that?
Yeah. So yes, visible is basically one of the ways. So there's like unknown and known, right? For example, like let's say you have a bunch of people in your database. So Salesforce for us, and we use Marketo to send email. Every time we send an email campaign out, we note in Salesforce that it's a campaign. We're sending this audience, and we track using visible to see whether or not this was the last touch that the person had on them before they converted into an opportunity. Mm. Now, we have rules set up though at Electric, and I think this is a very important caveat between sales and marketing. We use 45-day window of time by which we say, if marketing was the last thing that touched this thing, like sent them a webinar email, they attended the webinar, we sent it over to sales because they wanted to see the product. We use 45-day cutoff at Electric because that's typically how long our sales cycle is. So like if a sales rep has not touched it in 45 days, then give marketing the credit for originating that record. If, for example, we find a lead comes inbound to the website, but a rep has been touching it in under 45 days, marketing cannot take credit for that as originated, even though it came in through the website. We say, absolutely not. The SDR was the one reaching out. They should be the one giving credit for it. So we have a fantastic sales ops organization who works to do a lot of this automation in Salesforce. I think it's one of the more sophisticated environments I've seen, but that those are two ways we look at whether or not it's originated or influenced, and we use visible and Salesforce campaigns to do it.
I love that. So many people get confused about the different areas of marketing, whether it's marketing ops and then content creation or PR or right. social or whatever part you're sort of dealing with. But without good marketing ops, it becomes challenging to know what works and what doesn't work, which goes to your conversation about channels, right? So maybe speak around why you need to know what channel is working at what time.
Yeah. And so I take probably the most conservative view. I think of like attribution reporting, which is just looking at first touch. There are plenty of other ways in which you can attribute some pipeline or bookings back to other things you're doing. But I, for example, there's organic search, there's paid search, there's PR, there's an organic search. I lump content into that. There's affiliate marketing. There's like a dozen channels that you can think of for how you drive money into the business. I care to know like which of those originated the thing, right? Mm. I assume by the other ways in which we're touching the lead that it's helpful in their journey, right? So like, let's say we drove a lead in through, for example, inside.com. That's an affiliate we run advertising with. Let's say somebody saw our ad there and they raised their hand. They came in as a new lead. Well, I hope that through the other things we do to nurture them over time that they become more invested in Electric. But the thing I really care about is what did I invest in the first place that drove that person? And so that's why I think first touch attribution reporting is very important. You can also toggle at Unvisible. You can toggle whether or not you look at first touch, UW, multi-touch, or full path. All the ways in which they touched your business and give equal credit to it, for example. I weight everything on first touch. It depends on really, I think, your goals.
Does the origination drive how you nurture that lead?
Today, no, at Electric. I started 9 months ago, but and we're a growing business. Like eventually, we definitely should be talking to people differently based on the path that they found us in. But today, not so much. Because our sales cycle, given the business is 45 days, actually moving too quick. Yeah. Like you need IT support. Everybody needs IT support, but some people just need it more acutely than others. And those that move into opportunity really just close in very quick time frame.
So what fascinates me about sort of the whole journey of Electric is that IT support's not a new concept.
Right.
Right. Like it's if I want to go to IBM and have something outsourced and deal with IT support, they're very common, right? Whether it's TCS or whoever it might be. But for whatever reason, Electric is just exploding in this space right now. And I would have never thought that this was a category where there would be new growth. And so for me, this is basically mind-blowing how you guys have grown so quickly and taken over the tech support world. Why? How?
Sure. Well, first of all, like massive credit to the CEO because he actually owned his own business called Swarm. It was another tech company that was sold to USA Today. No, I'm sorry, Groupon. Sorry, he sold two businesses. One was USA Today. The other one was Groupon. And actually his pain point while running that company was IT because some of the merchants that he was supporting, like they just couldn't get IT together. And one of the reasons why it's been a, I think a challenge in the past, because it's hard to do. Every business is nuanced. in terms of their IT environment. And so while IT support is something that is a known problem for people that they need to solve, how Electric is solving that is just different, which allows us to do it at like half the cost, right? We're automating how we solve help desk tickets. Also, we have a really like innovative way of showing IT managers like how borked or not borked their like IT environment is by just deploying sets of standard policies and procedures. And we make it sort of like the protocol for everybody. So that is the why I joined as a marketer. So this is advice to other marketers, which is
good.
You need to join painkillers. You need to join companies that are solving a problem that is very painful for the buyer and not vitamins. I've worked at vitamins. And vitamins are hard because, you know, you not only have to tell people that this is a problem, you also need to be like, oh, and this is a solution for us. I don't have to tell people IT support is a problem. They already know. It's a big pain. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm just like, look, solve it this way. It's cheaper. I can capture all the demand that's active in the market today. So I would just say like, do a lot of vetting about the product market before you join as a marketer, because the best sales and marketing teams on the planet can't do anything about a crappy product that like nobody wants.
Yeah. I love that you make the comparisons to painkillers and vitamins, because that's essentially what you're doing, right? Here's the medication to make the pain stop.
Make the pain stop. Absolutely. And by the way, I can absolutely not take credit for the painkiller vitamin analogy. And I'm blanking on the guy's name who came up with it. But the minute I heard it. Like it just makes sense, right, Mark?
Yeah, I love it. You know, I think it's fantastic. So, I mean, this really segues nicely into the conversation around marketing force costs as well as sales forecasts, because what I've found is that we conflate one with the other and they're not the same thing. We need to measure them separately. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So two things. One, the way marketing generates demand is much different than the way sales generates demand. Sales are making cold calls and emails, and hopefully they're doing some social selling, but that it's very prescriptive, right? You make 100 dials a day. You're going to set two meetings a day. One's going to go to pipeline and one's going to close in the month, for example.
Right.
That's a math problem. And you know, you got to get very good these days about breaking in with email and call. And I give David Wiener, VP of sales at Electric, like so much credit, and John Ornberger, who runs the SDR team, just like creative ways of like breaking in, very difficult. But it's really like, it's easier to forecast how many reps you need to be doing that thing based on the plan. With marketing, I have hosts of things that I'm testing every month. I spend about 50% of our budget testing stuff and the other 50% on known meeting producers.
Okay, I want to pause here because so many people don't understand why this is important. Why are you spending so much time and effort on testing?
Yeah, I mean, we're growing business, but we're doubling revenue. And so if I need to know how we double revenue, if marketing is still 36% of a number that doubled, every month I need to figure out how to get better at doing more marketing, setting more meetings. So I do that with a portion of the budget I have. I mean, I make best guesses. I mean, I've been doing this a while, so hopefully my guesses don't like stop all the time. But I forecast very conservative numbers into any of the investments I'm making in new lanes. So for example,
this is critical for hypergrowth, right? Because if you're not testing with scale, you're never going to know.
Right. And shame on the CEOs who don't allow marketers the latitude to be testing, because that is a really tough spot to put a marketer in. And by the way, there are only so many growth hacks marketers can do. There's only so many freaking email tests I can run on the same day.
Surely just running an email campaign every week is going to lead to the growth. Come on.
Right? No, I seriously. So that's where like my biggest headache comes.
Right.
But you know, CEO and CFO at Electric really understand this, that we're making the best possible educated guesses we can. We're making very conservative forecasts in terms of how we think we're going to meet the goals. You know, it's been working for us. We've had some really creative ideas, testament to my marketing team for just coming up with them. And like I said, 50% though. I think some marketers are way less, you know, spend way less in their budget, but maybe they're a little bit more mature and they know which channels work. But until we're there, it's going to be heavy test mode.
Right. OKRs. And so many people don't understand this if they're not from like the startup world. What is an OKR? Yeah.
So OKR, it was a Google pioneered, I think, framework for how you think about goals for your team. And it stands for objectives and key results, Like the premise is really to just come up with 3 to 5 objectives and then 3 to 5 key results under it, with the goal of making the objective like massively aspirational. So I'll give you one of our objectives, like dramatically increase the number of businesses that find and use us for IT support, dramatically increase, you know, in some aspirational term. Under that though, I have for each member of my team, 3 to 5 key results that they're tied to, which say, if you do this, that means we hit our objective. So it's very clear, very crystal clear about what everybody's marching against. And everybody is mapped then to the forecast. And I say, look, hit these numbers. This means success. It's also fantastic for their career growth. They're not unclear about what success means for the business, but like how to get there. And so I think the key results, and one important caveat with OKRs, it's not a list of initiatives. It's not like, I'm going to do this thing. It's like,
it's not a task list.
No, it's not a task list. It's key results. Like this number means success of the objective. So for example, like dramatically increase the number of, you know, companies that use us for IT as an example. The key result for that is a number. I want 40 new businesses signed on for marketing originated deals this month as an example, or no, this quarter. There's a whole task list that my team has that shows us how we're going to get those 40 meetings, but the real key result is the 40 deals. So I love it. I think it's just so helpful. It's simple. It's easy.
Why is it important, do you think, for people to develop a rigor around that though? Because there's a lot of marketing leaders that this may be news to, right? Especially if they're not from sort of the tech world.
Sure.
If they look at this, they're like, okay, this is like a new concept for me. I understand KPIs, but OKRs and KPIs are not necessarily the same thing. How do I, if I'm a marketing leader looking at this right now, thinking, okay, I need to infuse some new growth ideas into my business because I'm typically not from this world. Why the rigor around OKRs?
Yeah, I mean, I think putting a very clear goal in front of your team is massively beneficial. Nobody's unclear. Everybody's marching in the same direction. But for example, if you're dramatically increasing the number of people that buy from you every quarter, the key results are, you know, again, we'll put a number to it. Well, specifically how many. KPIs could be like, I'm going to reach out to 10 affiliates to see which of these are going to get me to my key result. The KPI is around maybe the initiatives you're doing, but ultimately has to roll into the key result. It's like this thing said, I did what I set out to do.
This is the only thing that matters. This is exactly what we're marching towards. This is our one goal. This is
one goal. Yes. And you know, you give, like I said, there's 3 to 5 key results because there isn't maybe one dimension that means you've dramatically increased the number of businesses that buy you for IT support. But the process of running through that with a team, I do it every quarter with them. We've kept the OKRs pretty much the same between the last 2 quarters, but the original process for running it takes a team of about 7 to 2 hours to kind of like run through the full list. And I love doing it together because we also use the radical candor philosophy, which is like, you have to challenge directly. We all care about each other personally, but I love the process of doing OKRs together under that like sort of radical candor, like ethos, if you will, because I put the objectives and the key results up on the board. And I'm like, if anybody doesn't think that these are the right things to hit our business goals, like speak up and like challenge your peer. You know, Bob says he's going to put up, you know, 15 meetings towards our 16 meeting goal. Well, why don't you push Bob and tell him to do like 30 and like we can try to overachieve. And so I don't know. I think the whole process of like doing the OKRs together too is really important.
So what I love about your philosophy here is that there's a very clear through line from objectives to key results to radical candor, especially in like how we deal with this process.
Yeah.
Sometimes people view radical candor though as an opportunity to be a jerk. Mm-hmm. How do we separate those two things?
Yeah, the being a jerk, I think, falls into one of the quadrants. I think it's like, I don't know, manipulative insincerity or something. It's like you challenge directly and you don't care personally, so you're just right, exactly. Jerk. And we know plenty of those people.
Yeah.
I try to do a lot of the building under care personally. You have to demonstrate more consistently that you enjoy like working with these people and that you're just not a jerk in your core. I mean, I challenge directly all the time, but I think my team knows I deeply, deeply care about them as individuals. And so it gets easier.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people miss, especially if they haven't done any reading on what radical candor is. Mm-hmm. They miss that caring personally piece.
Care personally.
Right?
It precedes the challenge directly. You have to start with care personally or everything.
Because otherwise, what's the point of challenging? Otherwise, I would be indifferent to you.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that's ruinous empathy. That's like they say, even like the worst. Like you don't give crap about your team and you're not challenging and you're not nice. You're just like, you know, but.
And you encourage other people to do the same thing, I find as well, right? So it's not just about the leader of the marketing team that has the ability to do radical candor. You're calling upon your team to do the same thing.
Absolutely.
With each other and with you and with the goals.
Yes, and with the goals. And it takes a lot of work, Mark. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. You know, you have a lot of people with different personalities. You have to kind of push them.
I'm glad that you said that because that was going to be my next question is there's a bunch of different personalities within the marketing department that there may be some wallflowers that don't necessarily want to share their opinion or challenge or anything like that. So how do people deal with those kinds of situations?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes in some cases, it's uncomfortable for people to have to push each other. But I do believe that's part of my job as the manager to kind of like drive the conversation along. I'm like, you know, so if they're having a dialogue in front of me, I'm like, you know, Danny, do you really think that? Like challenge Braden, tell him like, what do you think, you know, or really, is this the right path or you're just being, you know, you're letting them off.
And you've got to make it a safe space for that person too, though, because that person has to know that if they share their opinion, there's not going to be retribution for sharing their opinion.
Absolutely. And you know how you prevent that? You just care personally. You're just not a jerk. You know, you just say to them, it's okay. Just tell me we're never going to get better if you don't challenge me, even challenge me directly, please. I need to get better.
Yes.
So you make it comfortable.
So as you build up your team and you ask that team to have radical candor and to be able to share that way, is there a way that the team realizes they've achieved that full level of being able to share with each other? Or is it a continuous process?
No, it's continuous. It is absolutely continuous. Yeah, you got to work on it.
Andrea, as we wrap up, what's the one thing that you want to leave the listeners with today? I mean, these are marketing professionals that are here listening to your advice and you've shared so much wisdom already. Is there one thing that you want them to think about?
Well, two things. I know we obviously touched on the radical candor. I do believe that that's, if you're not familiar with that, it's by Kim Scott. Read it because I think marketers in general have sort of like this complex that every time we come into an organization, I think people are unclear about what our goals are. And so I think creating fantastic goals for your team with radical candor as the backstop just really like accelerates your ability to be creative and take risks. And it's okay if things don't work out and to at least have enough of the data to back up why you're making the recommendations and then to know how it's performing and just, you know, go for it, not to sit back. You know, for example, if you think like taxi toppers in New York City are a great use of your investment because it's your gut, don't be afraid to like make the recommendation to the CFO as long as you can back it up, but don't lead with fear.
Back it up. That's the key.
Yeah. Don't lead with fear. Just like get after it. You're, you know, you're in that position for a reason. So
I love that your message throughout this entire discussion has been one about accountability, results, and courage. And I think that that's the way that I see you in the marketplace today. Thank you so much for being here. How do people follow you online?
How do you follow me? So just first name, last name on LinkedIn. And also, if anybody has any follow-up questions about anything I was talking about, Visible included, Andrea@electric.ai, that'll get right to my email.
Amazing. Andrea, thank you so much for being here again, and thank you so much for sharing your wisdom.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
Wow, what an incredible interview with my friend Andrea Kale. She really gave the goods when it comes to solid, actionable tactics and strategy. A few things I took away. Implement Bizible. So you've got to know which channels are working. Bizible is her tool of choice. I believe it was purchased by Marketo some time ago. Don't quote me on that, but you've got to know which channels are working. And so you've got to have the analytics to show it. You've got to build really good forecasts by each lane that you're investing in. And you've got to create solid definition about marketing originated and versus influenced business and leads. Build the reporting into the operations. And give credit where credit is due. I was pumped with the wisdom that Andrea shared during this interview. Please share this with your friends, family, and colleagues. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps us a ton. And tell us how you feel on social, because we really care about your input. We really care about your feedback. Highly encourage you to reach out to Andrea. She's doing incredible things at electric.ai. Thank you so much for listening. Have a fantastic day.